Chapter 25. Thank you for staying. Maybe I'll get into my market mind when I've been out a few minutes, he murmured. I don't know. As he went, she said eagerly, you may hear them speak of me in Casterbridge as time goes on. If they tell you I'm a coquette, which some may, because of the incidents of my life, don't believe it, for I am not. I swear I will not, he said fervidly. Thus the two. As he had enkindled the young man's enthusiasm till he was quite brimming with sentiment, while he from merely affording her a new form of idleness, had gone on to wake her serious solicitude. Why was this? They could not have told. Lucetta as a young girl would hardly have looked at a tradesman. But her ups and downs, capped by her indiscretions with Henchard, had made her uncritical as to station. In her poverty as he had met with repulse from the society to which as he had belonged, and as he had no great zest for renewing an attempt upon it now. Her heart longed for some arc into which it could fly, and be at rest. Rough or smooth she did not care so long as it was warm. Farfrae was shown out, it having entirely escaped him, that he had called to see Elizabeth. Lucetta at the window, watched him threading the maze of farmers and farmers' men. She could see by his gait, that he was conscious of her eyes, and her heart went out to him for his modesty pleaded with her sense of his unfitness, that he might be allowed to come again. He entered the market house, and she could see him no more. 3 minutes later, when as he had left the window, knocks, not of multitude but of strength, sounded through the house, and the waiting maid tripped up. The mayor, she said. Lucetta had reclined herself, and she was looking dreamily through her fingers. She did not answer at once, and the maid repeated the information with the addition, and he's afraid he hasn't much time to spare, he says. Oh, then tell him that as I have a headache I won't detain him today. The message was taken down, and she heard the door close. Lucetta had come to Casterbridge to quicken Henchard's feelings with regard to her. As he had quickened them, and now she was indifferent to the achievement. Her morning view of Elizabeth Jane as a disturbing element changed, and she no longer felt strongly the necessity of getting rid of the girl for her stepfather's sake. When the young woman came in, sweetly unconscious of the turn in the tide, Lucetta went up to her, and said quite sincerely, I'm so glad you've come. You'll live with me a long time, won't you? Elizabeth as a watchdog to keep her father off, what a new idea. Yet it was not unpleasing. Henchard had neglected her all these days, after compromising her indescribably in the past. The least he could have done, when he found himself free, and herself affluent, would have been to respond heartily and promptly to her invitation. Her emotions rose, fell, undulated, filled her with wild surmise at their suddenness, and so passed Lucetta's experiences of that day. 24. Poor Elizabeth Jane, little thinking what her malignant star had done to blast the budding attentions as he had won from Donald Farfrae, was glad to hear Lucetta's words about remaining. For in addition to Lucetta's house being a home, that raking view of the marketplace which it afforded had as much attraction for her as for Lucetta. The carrefour was like the regulation open plus in spectacular dramas, where the incidents that occur always happen to bear on the lives of the adjoining residents. Farmers, merchants, dairymen, quacks, hawkers, appeared there from week to week, and disappeared as the afternoon wasted away. It was the node of all orbits. From Saturday to Saturday, was as from day to day with the two young women now. In an emotional sense they did not live at all during the intervals. Wherever they might go wandering on other days, on market day they were sure to be at home. Both stole sly glances out of the window at Farfrae's shoulders and pole. His face they seldom saw, for, either through shyness, or not to disturb his mercantile mood, he avoided looking towards their quarters. Thus things went on, till a certain market morning brought a new sensation. Elizabeth and Lucetta were sitting at breakfast, when a parcel containing two dresses arrived for the latter from London. She called Elizabeth from her breakfast, and entering her friend's bedroom, Elizabeth saw the gown spread out on the bed, one of a deep cherry color, the other lighter, a glove lying at the end of each sleeve, a bonnet at the top of each neck, and parasols across the gloves. Lucetta standing beside the suggested human figure in an attitude of contemplation. "I wouldn't think so hard about it," said Elizabeth, marking the intensity with which Lucetta was alternating the question whether this or that would suit best. "But settling upon new clothes is so trying," said Lucetta. "You are that person," pointing to one of the arrangements, "or you are that totally different person," pointing to the other, "for the whole of the coming spring, and one of the two, you don't know which, may turn out to be very objectionable." It was finally decided by Miss Templeman that she would be the cherry-colored person at all hazards. The dress was pronounced to be a fit, and Lucetta walked with it into the front room, Elizabeth following her. The morning was exceptionally bright for the time of year. The sun fell so flat on the houses and pavement opposite Lucetta's residence that they poured their brightness into her rooms. Suddenly, after a rumbling of wheels, there were added to this steady light a fantastic series of circling irradiations upon the ceiling, and the companions turned to the window. Immediately opposite, a vehicle of strange description had come to a standstill, as if it had been placed there for exhibition. It was the new-fashioned agricultural implement called a horse drill, till then unknown, in its modern shape, in this part of the country, where the venerable seedlip was still used for sowing as in the days of the Heptarchy. Its arrival created about as much sensation in the corn market as a flying machine would create at Charing Cross. The farmers crowded round it, women drew near it, children crept under and into it. The machine was painted in bright hues of green, yellow, and red, and it resembled as a whole a compound of hornet, grasshopper, and shrimp, magnified enormously. Or it might have been likened to an upright musical instrument with the front gone. That was how it struck Lucetta. "Hi, it is a sort of agricultural piano," she said. "It has something to do with corn," said Elizabeth. "I wonder who thought of introducing it here?" Donald Farfrae was in the minds of both as the innovator, for though not a farmer he was closely leagued with farming operations. And as if in response to their thought he came up at that moment, looked at the machine, walked round it, and handled it, as if he knew something about its make. The two watchers had inwardly started at his coming, and Elizabeth left the window, went to the back of the room, and stood as if absorbed in the paneling of the wall. She hardly knew that as he had done this till Lucetta, animated by the conjunction of her new attire with the sight of Farfrae, spoke out, "Let us go, and look at the instrument, whatever it is." Elizabeth Jane's bonnet and shawl were pitchforked on in a moment, and they went out. Among all the agriculturists gathered round, the only appropriate possessor of the new machine seemed to be Lucetta, because she alone rivaled it in color. They examined it curiously, observing the rows of trumpet-shaped tubes one within the other, the little scoops, like revolving salt spoons, which tossed the seed into the upper ends of the tubes that conducted it to the ground, till somebody said, "Good morning, Elizabeth Jane." She looked up, and there was her stepfather. His greeting had been somewhat dry and thunderous, and Elizabeth Jane, embarrassed out of her equanimity, stammered at random, "This is the lady I live with, Father, Miss Templeman." Henchard put his hand to his hat, which he brought down with a great wave till it met his body at the knee. Miss Templeman bowed. "I'm happy to become acquainted with you, Mr. Henchard," she said. "His is a curious machine." "Yes," Henchard replied, and he proceeded to explain it, and still more forcibly to ridicule it. "Who brought it here?" said Lucetta.
"Oh, don't ask me, ma'am," said Henchard. "He thing why 'tis impossible it should act. 'Twas brought here by one of our machinists on the recommendation of a jumped-up jackanapes of a fellow who thinks his eye caught Elizabeth Jane's imploring face, and he stopped, probably thinking that the suit might be progressing. He turned to go away. Then something seemed to occur which his stepdaughter fancied must really be a hallucination of hers. A murmur apparently came from Henchard's lips in which he detected the words, "You refused to see me," reproachfully addressed to Lucetta. She could not believe that they had been uttered by her stepfather, unless, indeed, they might have been spoken to one of the yellow-gaitered farmers near them. Yet Lucetta seemed silent, and then all thought of the incident was dissipated by the humming of a song, which sounded as though from the interior of the machine. Henchard had by this time vanished into the market house, and both the women glanced towards the corn drill. They could see behind it the bent back of a man who was pushing his head into the internal works to master their simple secrets. The hum song went on. TWS on ASMR after N, a wee be re ESNWNTDN, when Kitty YA bra NWGWN see me, our EHLLS to gory. Elizabeth Jane had apprehended the singer in a moment, and looked guilty of she did not know what. Lucetta next recognized him, and more mistress of herself said archly, "The lass of gory from inside of a seed drill, what a phenomenon!" Satisfied at last with his investigation, the young man stood upright, and met their eyes across the summit. "We are looking at the wonderful new drill," Miss Templeman said. "But practically it is a stupid thing, is it not?" she added, on the strength of Henchard's information. "Stupid? Oh no," said Farfrae gravely. "T will revolutionize sowing hereabout. No more sowers flinging their seed about broadcast, so that some falls by the wayside and some among thorns, and all that. Each grain will go straight to its intended place, and nowhere else whatever." "Then the romance of the sower is gone for good," observed Elizabeth Jane, who felt herself at one with Farfrae in Bible reading at least. "He that observeth the wind shall not sow, apostrophe so the preacher said. But his words will not be to the point any more. How things change." "Eh, eh. It must be so," Donald admitted, his gaze fixing itself on a blank point far away. "But the machines are already very common in the east and north of England," he added apologetically. Lucetta seemed to be outside this train of sentiment, her acquaintance with the scriptures being somewhat limited. "Is the machine yours?" she asked of Farfrae. "Oh no, madam," said he, becoming embarrassed and deferential at the sound of her voice, though with Elizabeth Jane he was quite at his ease. "No, no, I merely recommended that it should be got." In the silence which followed, Farfrae appeared only conscious of her to have passed from perception of Elizabeth into a brighter sphere of existence than she appertained to. Lucetta, discerning that he was much mixed that day, partly in his mercantile mood and partly in his romantic one, said gaily to him, "Well, don't forsake the machine for us," and went indoors with her companion. The latter felt that as he had been in the way, though I was unaccountable to her. Lucetta explained the matter somewhat, by saying when they were again in the sitting room, "I had occasion to speak to Mr. Farfrae the other day, and so I knew him this morning." Lucetta was very kind towards Elizabeth that day. Together they saw the market thicken, and in course of time thin away with the slow decline of the sun towards the upper end of town, its rays taking the street endways, and enfilading the long thoroughfare from top to bottom. The gigs and vans disappeared one by one till there was not a vehicle in the street. The time of the riding world was over, the pedestrian world held sway. Field laborers and their wives and children trooped in from the villages for their weekly shopping, and instead of a rattle of wheels and a tramp of horses ruling the sound as earlier, there was nothing but the shuffle of many feet. All the implements were gone. All. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.